everyone. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. And today we're going to take you around America to some little known places that are good to visit. And traveling with me today in our studio is
Pam
and Josh.
And I'm Linda. And actually, this is one of our words that we're going to talk about, but it says underrated landmarks. And if something is underrated, it means maybe not that well known.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You can use this with like restaurants or very different kinds of places that, you know, people don't really talk about. So we have some maybe new places to our listeners, and some of them we've been to and some of them we haven't been to, but there's a lot of good vocabulary and some interesting information in our article, our travel article. So if you have your magazine with you, why don't you turn to page 14 so you can follow along with us as we travel around the United States. And if you have your digital device with you and you have Advanced on it, maybe you'd like to turn to that so you can also follow along as we read our article. So, Pam, what do you look for when you want to take a trip?
Well, I love to travel. I think everyone on the panel today enjoys traveling. I really like to travel to new places. I love beaches, I have to admit.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But so my husband often has to persuade me to, or convince me to go to a place that maybe doesn't have a beach where we can maybe see some historic things, some interesting things.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Josh?
I am also a big fan of travel, just like all the rest of the panelists today. And I also enjoy seeing natural beauty, so beaches, oceans, rivers, waterfalls, lakes. But I am one of those people who also really enjoy finding sort of like interesting places, maybe a little bit lesser known or out of the way, as well as places that have historical significance or architectural significance or are just interesting because they're different from what I expect.
Okay, I just want to say ditto to what Josh just said. That means that I feel the same way that he does. I love beaches, but I also like to go to historical places and museums, some museums, and discover, you know, little known. Those are sometimes the most interesting are places that, you know, are little known and not a lot of traffic through there. Not a lot of visitors, but they're often the most interesting and offer you a lot of historical background to an area. So hopefully these maybe will, you know, broaden our minds and help us to realize what's available in different places that you might find yourself. So today we're going to travel to two different places in the United States and I guess we're just going to go to one today. We're going to go to a place in New York, and later on, tomorrow, we're going to go to Seattle, and we're going to find our way to Chicago eventually and even to Hawaii. So we hope that you'll stay with us for our travel article that's 3 days long. So right now, if you have your magazine, why don't you follow along with us as we read this first little section, the introductory paragraph.
Let's take a trip. Overlooked U.S. landmarks and how to decipher hotel reviews. Underrated landmarks in the U.S. The seasoned traveler has likely seen and checked off most of the major U.S. tourist attractions from their bucket list. Take selfie in front of the Golden Gate Bridge. Check. Gobble beignets in the French Quarter in New Orleans, Louisiana. Double check. The contiguous states, plus Hawaii and Alaska, have no shortage of amazing places to see. But sometimes the most memorable landmarks aren't highlighted in guidebooks or on typical top 10 must-see lists. Case in point, these underrated landmarks picked from the top 25 U.S. destinations, according to a 2016 TripAdvisor survey.
Okay, so our title is what we're going to do, right? We're going to take a trip, and it says that it's overlooked U.S. landmarks and how to decipher hotel reviews. So this is our kind of our deck that explains what the next 3 days are going to be about. So overlooked just means, you know, people don't really pay attention to them. It's not at the top of their list of things to do or places to go.
Right.
And what about decipher? We're going to also learn how to decipher hotel reviews. What does that word mean?
If you decipher something, you discover the meaning. Usually it's maybe a hidden meaning. We can say we discover, you decipher codes, try to break codes. And so it just means there's something that's hidden that you need to try to find or figure out.
Okay, and we also use this with, in not just with hotel reviews, but a lot of different things. Okay, well, here it says that we are going to underrated landmarks in the U.S., and if something is underrated, Josh, what is it?
Well, it means that even though people don't speak of it very highly, it's actually really worth seeing.
Okay.
And if you rate something, oftentimes if you go and stay in a hotel, they may send you an email and ask you to give a review. We'll talk about that later. But they may ask you to rate their hotel, give it a score. So these are kind of overlooked, but underrated. They're not scored very highly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we see that we start out with the seasoned traveler. I think, do you guys consider yourself seasoned travelers?
I do. I've done a lot of travel, and I've run into a lot of problems along the way and come up with a lot of solutions, and that has seasoned me into becoming a traveler that's kind of used to all the different things that can go right and go wrong.
I think that's a great explanation of a seasoned traveler, too.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who encounters problems and who has had the experience of finding solutions.
I just want to ask, just give us an example of one problem.
So a problem is you look at a hotel review, you look at the pictures, you book it, and then realize that what you got into was not what you were expecting because you didn't check enough places and enough reviews before you went ahead and made a reservation.
Oh, yeah, that's happened to me, too. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, really?
And sometimes the results can be very surprising. For example, going to a hotel with your family that is not family-friendly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That can happen if you don't check enough reviews or enough sites before you make a reservation.
Yeah, so that's a good, actually, piece of advice for everybody. Look at the reviews and see what, especially like on Expedia and TripAdvisor,
sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go in and see the reviews, and they are very accurate usually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, you know, really say what they feel about a place. So.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about reviews later, a little more in depth, but I think just keep in mind, it's interesting as you read reviews, you'll always see one who didn't enjoy it at all. In fact, they hated it. They had a terrible experience. But I think it's important to look at the average. Take the average number of reviews and see what the majority of the people felt about it.
Right. Well, we see here that most seasoned travelers have done a lot of the same places or visited a lot of the same places in the United States because it's on their bucket list. And actually, wasn't this a title of a movie?
Yes.
A while back, a very fun movie, The Bucket List.
Right. In your bucket list, you probably are hearing this term a lot lately. It's basically a list of things that you want to do in this lifetime before it's too late.
Okay, or places you want to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the reason why they call it the bucket list is that there is a saying in English, when somebody kicks the bucket, means that they have passed on.
That's right.
They have died, right? So the bucket list is all the things you want to do in this life before you pass on to the next.
Okay. But I do want to caution you not to use kick the bucket because it is a very slang term for a way of saying that somebody passed away.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just so when you hear it, you know what it is, but I would advise you not to use it.
Right.
And so they give a couple of examples, you know, taking a selfie in front of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco and eating these donuts with no hole. Okay.
It's called a beignet. It's a French donut, beignet.
Have you had one?
I have. And they're delicious.
Well, of course, it's a donut.
Right. Very light.
How about you, Josh? Have you been to New Orleans?
So I have not yet been to New Orleans. My family went, but I did not get to go. And I was looking forward to having beignets on the street, but I've not had that experience yet.
Yeah, me neither. Okay. And then it says that the contiguous states, plus Hawaii and Alaska, have amazing places to see. And if something is contiguous, it just means that they're connected. So 48 states are connected, are contiguous United States. And then, of course, Hawaii is an island group. And then Alaska is off the top of Canada. Mm-hmm. So those two are not part of the contiguous states. And it says that some of the most memorable landmarks aren't highlighted in guidebooks, and that is really true. You know, sometimes when you go to one place that's listed in a guidebook and you kind of look around, you're like, oh, there's another place like right there that I didn't read about, so let's go check that out too.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That's when you find really interesting places.
Mm-hmm.
And they give an example, and that is what case in point means, right?
Right. It's just a short way of saying, it's another way of saying, for example, or this will help prove my point, case in point.
Right. And they say here that these places that we're going to talk about were picked from TripAdvisory survey. And if you're not familiar with TripAdvisory, it's really a great site to find out information about places that you might want to visit, about hotels, about things to do, about places to eat, with a lot of ratings that we were talking about earlier. So, you know, when I usually travel, you know, I usually look through to see, like, what comes up at the top. You know, if we only have a short period of time, then, you know, pick the top 10 that you want to see. Because they're usually pretty accurate,
I think.
That's
true. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the first place that we're going to be visiting here is Prospect Park, New York. So continue on with us as we finish reading page 14.
One, Prospect Park, New York. Search New York City landmarks and Central Park is sure to top the results. But there's another park that Brooklynites are hip to. We're talking about Prospect Park. Inside, the park houses a zoo, playgrounds, ice skating rinks, and even goats that are helping to eat invasive plant species. Free concerts are also held at the band shell. Enter the park through the main entrance, Grand Army Plaza, and you can also visit the nearby Brooklyn Public Library, Brooklyn Botanic Garden, and Brooklyn Museum. Our hotel pick? Hotel Le Bleu.
So, have either one of you been to New York?
Only at 3 months old. So I don't remember anything, unfortunately.
So I was fortunate enough to go for a while when I was in high school. I was in New Haven, Connecticut for a summer, and I went to New York. And then also just a few years ago, a very good friend of mine who I went, well, he was a friend of mine when I went to school in Tacoma, Washington, got married in New York, and so I went and stayed in Brooklyn for a couple weeks and helped him with his wedding.
Oh, so you actually stayed in Brooklyn, which is where this park is, and did you go to this park?
So I walked by the park, but because I was really helping out with a lot of the wedding preparations, I didn't have a whole lot of time to just go out and sightsee. I thought Brooklyn was fantastic. I loved being there. Everything there was really very interesting, but I did not take advantage of all the things in Prospect Park. And so I'm very glad that we have this article, because when I go back to New York, I will certainly go back to Brooklyn, and I will definitely check some of these places out.
Yeah, I've never been to Brooklyn. I've been to New York City before. Mm-hmm. And Brooklyn is, I guess, you know, usually they call it a borough. It's kind of like a suburb of New York.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I think everything is a suburb of New York City.
Right.
So it says that I think probably most of you have heard of Central Park. If you're familiar with New York City at all, that is the big, big park in the middle of New York City. But then if you go to Brooklyn, and they're called Brooklynites, there's another park that they are hip to. And if you are hip to something, what are you?
You know about it. You're familiar with it. It's slang. You can use it if you want to, but you won't find it on a test anywhere. It's definitely slang.
Okay. And so they're introducing Prospect Park. It really has a lot of things inside of it. So it, and it's quite large. We see that there's a zoo. So you see it houses a zoo. You know, that we use that verb sometime to say that instead of saying there's a zoo there, you can say the park houses it or keeps a zoo. And playgrounds for kids, ice skating rinks. So you, if, and that is plural, so you know that this is a very large park.
Sure.
Because
mm-hmm.
ice skating rinks are usually not small.
Right.
And they even have goats that are helping to eat invasive plant species. And if something is invading, this is kind of an interesting word, what makes a plant species invasive?
Well, it's not local to the area, so it's not from there. So it's invading from another place, and it's taking over.
Mm-hmm.
So taking over the space or resources that local plants would normally have.
Okay.
In the States, we actually have two plants that we consider invasive. Kudzu, K-U-D-Z-U, is from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brought over, I think, in the 1940s to control weeds. But it is highly invasive, and it spreads. It's just out of control. But bamboo is another
that's
considered
that.
Invasive.
Right. So you really have to keep, if you're going to take bamboo or plant it, you really have to control the area that it's in because it is very invasive.
It will take over large areas, just like the kudzu. And it's a problem in many different parts of the United States, actually, both of those species.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you might be interested to see that goats are used here to eat the invasive plant species. Actually, I thought it was kind of interesting. My niece, they have goats, and people in northern Minnesota, and people like rent their goats to clear land.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And because they eat off all of the brush and all of the plants in the land, so if they want to till it to make, like, you know, a garden, or they're going to be planting. The first animal that goes through are the goats. It's very, very interesting. It's more natural than just, you know, using a tractor to plow it under.
Or chemicals.
Or chemicals,
right.
For sure.
Right, or chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And if you
look
in an area for somebody who keeps goats, if they keep them in a small pen, quite quickly that pen will turn to dirt because the goats will literally eat everything there.
Right.
Wow.
And also we see that there are free concerts in this park at the Band Shell.
Now, my hometown of Memphis, Tennessee has a beautiful old historic band shell. And what that is, it's an outdoor area for performances. It's closed on the backside. It's open on the front. It's kind of curved. And so it sort of has the shape of a shell.
Mm-hmm. And well, if you live in Taipei City, there's one at Daan Park. There's a band shell there that has, you know, open concerts. So, yeah, the back is closed, and then the front, of course, is open to the audience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there is a main entrance. It's called the Grand Army Plaza. So that, and it is nearby a lot of other very popular sites in New York City, like the library, the Botanic Garden, and the Brooklyn Museum. I've never been to any of them. But I haven't been to Brooklyn.
Right. I unfortunately did not have a chance to go to any of those places either, but the next time I go back to Brooklyn, I will certainly take a look.
Does your friend still live there?
He does. And so, but he splits his time between New York and Seattle, so I have to catch him at the right time of year.
Oh, well, that's the next place we're going to talk about, so hey. And this article is also giving us advice on hotels, and they say that their hotel pick is the Hotel Le Bleu. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And it is a 3-star hotel. It had fairly good ratings. I looked it up to see. So, and it's very conveniently located to all of these. So that's one thing you also want to consider when you're booking hotels, is how close it is to what you want to actually do.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Because you can spend a lot of money on transportation.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to a place like this and stay in a hotel like this, you don't need to go with a tour group. You can do it on your own.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a great point.
Well, I know at the beginning, sorry, I was a little confused. I said we were just doing one place today, but we actually are doing Seattle. So we're now on page 15, and we invite you to read this along with us.
Two, Underground Seattle. Surely you've heard of Pike Place Market, But did you know that there's an underground city below Seattle? The original business district was destroyed during a fire in 1889. And in the rebuilding process, the city decided to elevate the streets due to constant flooding. You see, Seattle was built on tidelands. In the end, there were two cities stacked on top of each other. But the underground city was closed in the early 1900s because of concerns surrounding the bubonic plague. Today, tours like Phil Spiedel's Underground Tour take curious onlookers through a series of tunnels in the Pioneer Square Historic District, where brick storefronts still stand. Our hotel pick? Inn at the Market.
So, have you been to Seattle?
I have.
And where did you go?
Well, of course, I've been to Pike Place Market okay. and lots of great seafood places, restaurants.
And that's it?
Well, every time I've been there for business.
Okay.
So my time has been kind of short.
Sure. So you didn't catch any fish?
I didn't, but I ate a lot of fish.
Okay, very good.
And the Space Needle. I've been to the Space Needle.
Okay.
I think that's one of the iconic places that people say you have to go to.
Definitely.
Have you been to Seattle?
So I lived in Tacoma, which is a city just south of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably about maybe a half-hour drive away. But then when I was done university, that's where I went to school, I lived in a suburb of Seattle for about a year, and I interned at the Seattle Children's Opera, so I spent a lot of time in various places in Seattle, and a lot of the must-see places, actually. But I did not do the underground tour, I have to admit.
Did you go to Pioneer Square? Have you been there?
I did, and whenever I had people visit, that was one of the places that we would go, of course. But I would go to Pioneer Square for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
Some of the coffees that are there are fantastic. Some of the foods that are there are fantastic. Right around the corner is the Ivar's. It's a chain that does clam chowder and other seafood. It's delicious, and so I would go there quite often.
Okay. Well, actually, I lived in Seattle for 3 years, and I've also been to Pioneer Square many times. I have visited Pioneer Square many times, but I can't remember if I've been to this underground. I don't think I've been to the underground tour. I know I haven't been on the underground tour, or they were just making it a tourist spot years ago when I used to live there.
Sure.
So we've lived, I know that Pike Place Market is very famous. You know, you can go see them, like, throwing fish
right.
at the fish place there.
Right.
And they have great restaurants inside Pike
mm-hmm.
Place Market.
Mm-hmm.
And this is talking about not the above ground areas, but the underground city below. So the business district had a fire back in the late 1800s, and then they decided to raise the streets because of the constant flooding. And Seattle was originally built on tidelands. A tideland is what?
That just refers to land that when the sea level is at its highest, we know that at certain times of day or night, the sea rushes in over the shore when it's at its highest. This is called tidelands.
Okay.
Land that's just underwater at certain points during the day or night.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting. I looked up some other cities, and one of them was San Francisco. You know, we usually think of San Francisco sits on the bay, but those low-lying areas were actually tidelands. So
sure.
they've had to do some, shoring up for those areas, like right down by the water. And also the one I found very surprising was a section of Chicago was considered to be built on a tideland. And,
really?
And, yes, and they had to raise, I think in the late 1800s or early 1900s, they had to raise like a block in that area down there. But Chicago itself is quite interesting, and we're going to talk about where to go there tomorrow, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So here we see that Seattle was built on tidelands, so they built the city above the city, okay? So they're stacked on top of each other like two books.
That's interesting.
And then apparently the underground city used to be open, and then they closed it because of the bubonic plague, which you do not hear about anymore.
Right. They must have been having a major rat problem. You know, I can imagine this area as being low, dark, and wet, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they were having probably a major rat problem. And if you look at our specialized terms, you see this was a deadly disease And if you want to look it up, you can get a little more information. It's kind of interesting, but in the 1300s, 25 million people died in Europe alone from this plague.
Well, I think part of it is because of the kind of sanitation, you know, that cities had. They just dumped their garbage into the streets, and it invited every rat in the world to come there.
Right.
So it's easy. It was easy for it to spread. But when you think 25 million people, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can take an underground tour. They've opened it up again, and you can. There's a series of tunnels in the Pioneer Square Historic District, which Josh talked about a lot. A lot of great coffee shops and very interesting buildings above ground as well.
It's true.
And you can go on a tour underground with the underground tour, okay? I think you need to book this ahead of time. So don't just show up one day and go, oh, I want to do this.
Right.
And their hotel pick here is Inn at the Market, and that is right at Pike Place Market. And I think this is the one that starts around $350.
Oh, wow.
So,
but the nice thing about that location is that you are very central. It's very easy to get around from there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And actually, downtown Seattle area is pretty compact.
It is.
You know, so Pioneer Square is just a few blocks away from Pike Place Market. So mm-hmm. all of these, you know, sites are pretty easy just to walk to. Well, we hope you will join us again tomorrow as we continue our tour around the United States to overlooked U.S. landmarks. Bye for now.
Goodbye.